Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Welcome back to episode number 10 of the Ice Lab Podcast. Mikey, we made it to double digits. We're still here. We're still surviving.
Number 10. I can't believe we've made it this far. We're making it up as we go. But here we are, episode 10. We got a very, very special guest today. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's going to be a great podcast. We're excited to keep bringing more to you guys. So this is only episode 10, and hopefully we'll, you never know, we'll make it to 10,000 or whatever we do. We'll just keep rolling with it. So we're going to talk a little bit first. We definitely have to talk about it. So today we're recording this episode on August 5th, the day that Damian Warner absolutely crushed it at the Olympics. Congratulations, Damian. You started it right out of the gate, absolutely crushing it. You deserve the win. First Canadian man to ever win the decathlon at the Olympic level and also Olympic record. So Damian, kudos to you, man. Amazing job.
Just an animal, buddy. I remember training with you about 10 years ago. You had your eye on the prize back then, and the amount of work you've put in is just unbelievable. That long jump you did, absolutely mind-blowing. Would have ended up third place in the solo event long jump, so just absolutely crazy. I don't know how you compete over 10 events over 2 days, about an hour and a half, 2 hours between each event. I can't even comprehend what you just did over the last 48 hours. Absolutely amazing, buddy. Congrats. You deserve every minute of it. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
Best athlete in the world.
Exactly. Exactly.
And also a huge congratulations and to Revolution Sport Conditioning for, you know, making sure and helping Damian along his journey. He's been there for years, and you guys obviously put in the work for him, and just you guys, congratulations to the whole team, everybody at RevCon, everybody in Damian's background. So awesome. Thank you guys for showing us something really inspiring to keep us pushing for this year. So along with that, and the other congratulations to all the other medalists and all the other competitors at Tokyo. There's still a few more events going on, and we can't wait to watch those. So Mike, leading off of that, how you feeling, buddy?
Feeling good. Also, just wanted to throw out a big good luck to the women's soccer team headed into the gold medal game in about 12 hours. We will be waking up early before training and definitely catching that. So good luck. Give it your all, girls.
Awesome. Okay, well, want to dive into it with our guest today then, Mike?
Let's dive into it. We have on Dr. John Vargo from Sarnia today. I have been in contact with him for about 20 years now. He's played a big role right from my adolescence through to now. He's a chiropractic sports injury specialist with an honors bachelor of science degree in human kinetics from the University of Guelph, chiropractic degree from the Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College in Toronto, and he's also completed his postgraduate chiropractic sports injury specialty. He has been a member of the Athletics Canada medical team, the Canadian track and field chiropractic team doctor at the 2016 Summer Olympics, team chiropractor for the Sarnia Sting, and currently works with several NHL and NFL players. One of the founding members of the Sarnia Chiropractic and Performance Center. He is a very, very busy man. Whenever I throw him a text, I'm coming back into town on Friday night, he gives me the green light to head over to his house Saturday morning, and he treats me right in his living room. Just a stand-up guy. We appreciate him. Thank you very much, Dr. Vargo, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys today.
Beautiful. So let's jump right into it. We've had a couple physiotherapists and osteopaths on the show so far. Chiropractics, what is it that you do? What is different? How do you stand out from those guys?
Right. Well, I mean, there are so many definitions of chiropractic. Probably one that suits my model would be that it's a health profession that focuses on diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of mechanical disorders of the musculoskeletal system. So, you know, dealing with neuromusculoskeletal issues in the human body, which is obviously a very important component of sport. Everything you guys do is so technical and so delicately balanced that when something is not working properly, it can be a performance issue. So anything we can do to help that system be balanced, it's going to be a benefit.
Beautiful. Have you always been interested in this as at a young age? What led you into this career path?
Yeah. So as a young athlete, actually I was in grade 9, I started to have a lot of knee pain and I was unable to continue playing football and basketball because of it. Unfortunately, at the time, my family doctor was not someone that was interested in sport. And the advice they gave me didn't really work out that well for me. So it was looking like I was going to be unable to continue. And a friend of mine who had the exact same problem went to a chiropractor. So he told his parents told my parents to, you know, about this. So I got an appointment. I got some different advice. It worked out exceptionally well. I responded very well and I was back playing. And the reality is that sport was a pretty important component of my life. It seemed like kids in my neighborhood either played sports or they got into trouble. And it scares me to think about that fork in the road that if I hadn't gone to that chiropractor, his name was Dr. Gary Hare, and had gotten some significant help from him, what the other fork in the road might have led me to do. So I'm pretty happy that I went that way with him.
Awesome. Now, when you think of chiropractors, a lot of the time you just think adjustments. Is that what you do? I think it's evolved over the years because it used to be just you go in, you get adjusted, you know, crack, snackle, pop, and then you move on. Has that changed for you or like for chiropractic, or is yours a different version of that? Do you do something different or?
Yeah, right. I think there are so many different models of practice and one would be the more traditional, you know, model that you describe where you just go in, get adjusted and you leave and you repeat if necessary. Other models include more modalities, you know, interferential current, laser, acupuncture, the use of therapeutic exercise. So lots of different models are out there. The model that I adopted was one that worked well on me when I was an athlete. And it includes a lot more active involvement on the patient side. So doing home care exercises, you know, stretching, strengthening, proprioceptive things, as well as the in-office type treatment. And then when you take it to the athletic setting, I mean, we have to treat people everywhere. Like Mike said, Mike can pop into my living room if it's a weekend or I can meet him at the office. We've treat people in hotel rooms, buses. You know, when you're with a team, you improvise and you make things work. So the model definitely has evolved over time. And with athletes, I mean, it has to be set up to meet their needs.
So right now, and for the past 20 years since I've met you, you've been working with some of the highest performers in the entire world. How did that come about and how did you reach that top?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of luck involved initially because everybody needs a break. And it doesn't matter if you're a skater, if you're a track athlete, if you're looking for a scholarship, somebody has to see you. And so you have to do your part. You have to build your foundation and your base. And I think if there's one thing I've done right in my career, it's to listen to what athletes like and to listen to what works for athletes. The truth is they don't care if you're a chiropractor or a voodoo doctor. The only thing they care about is, does it help? And so I think I've tried to listen and learn from athletes and other practitioners what is working for athletes, what technique, what modality, what new science is out there that they're finding very helpful. And if there is something that seems to be working well, I need to learn how to do it and I need to learn how to do it well. And so integrating things like that into your daily practice and using those things with athletes, it definitely gets you into a different arena. Because high performance athletes, again, they just care about results. So if you start to get results and you work with some younger athletes, they get older. There's this guy from Sarnia named Michael Marinaro. And, you know, he was a younger figure skater and he kind of got older and and he's doing some pretty great things right now. So I got a chance to grow along with him a little bit too. So that's what happens. And then typically you treat some athletes and they'll have teammates or friends that have injuries and they'll say, oh, you know, my guy's coming into town or I'm going to see him. Why don't you, you know, I know your knee's bugging you or your back's bothering you. Why don't you give him a call and we'll see, we'll get you set up to see if he can treat you. And so that leads you into another athlete and it just snowballs from there. And as long as you continue to provide results for those people, they'll utilize your service. So the other thing is you have to make yourself available because as you guys know, athletes don't live normal lives and don't have normal schedules. So if you have a practitioner that you want to go and see and they work from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. and they're not willing to make concessions to treat you after hours or to treat you at the drop of a hat, it's not going to work well for you. So you have to have practitioners that are they're well-versed in sport and that love sport. So they're willing to go outside of the box to work into your schedule. I think that's a really important component is to be available for athletes.
Yeah. Leaning back on the part where it's like, you know, the teammates talk and it goes from there. And that's when I listen to the TB12 Keep Going podcast quite often. So that's Tom Brady's company, TB12. And that's actually how he started seeing his therapist / trainer, Alex Guerrero, was I can't remember for which teammate it was. I think it might've been Edelman. I could be wrong, Mike. I don't know if you're certain either, but so he started seeing him and then Brady had an injury and he was like, yeah, he's in town, like treating me right now. Like, and they were talking or whatever. And then, so he's like, yeah, you should go and come over or what and treat. And so he treated him. And right after that, Brady just like was over the moon, obviously about this guy. And he's, you know, helped him play for how many years now and successfully and start this own brand. But it definitely, you know, like what you said, there's that little bit of break. And then also just like he was with this guy for a long time from like when he knew him from where I think he was based in California or something. And he was like new track athletes. And that's what he did. He built from like high school to varsity. And then it kept going from there. And then so it's definitely interesting how that can happen. And it's like how one teammate can put you into so many more people. But same thing. Right. He was like, oh, yeah, I'm going there for 3 days. And now I'm just going to the drop of the hat. Like, to this person, I'm just going to leave the availability there.
Right. I think it's interesting too, because you can be guaranteed that when you work with high performance athletes, they motivate you as a practitioner to continue to improve yourself. And I mean, I think myself for sure, but lots of other sport practitioners should be thanking their athletes for motivating them to continue learning. And our process is lifelong learning. Not unlike you guys for lifelong improvement and continuous training. And when you work with high performance athletes, they pull you along and they force you to always try and be a better version of yourself, learning new things and trying to find out what is on the cutting edge. And so I think it's a pretty symbiotic relationship. We both benefit from each other in that respect.
Now, when you talk about lifelong learning, so you went to school, obviously you go to chiropractic school, and then what did you do from there to really, like you said, you found different modalities and different ways to treat people. What did you do from there to continue to do that and not just do the standard practice?
Right. So, I mean, just examples of things that somebody would take, like there are like annual sport medicine conferences that people would attend. Like I go to all of those all the time for sure. Active release therapy has been a big thing in sport for a long time. I've taken, you know, umpteen of those courses. And you take them over and over again. Some people take it once and they learn it and that's good enough for them. I took lower extremity 4 times. I mean, I want to learn it inside out. I want to be very good at it, as good at it as I can. Some people would say I'm a slow learner. And I would say that every time I go back and learn, I pick up new details that I missed last time. Learning acupuncture. I went to McMaster University and did the neurofunctional acupuncture program in their department of anesthesiology. So there are always new things coming up, and there are always new techniques and courses that are available. And you just have to access them and take the time to go out and learn new things.
Yes, you're clearly very passionate about your job. And I think that is where all that success comes from. When you're passionate about something, the learning never stops. And that shows in the quality of your work for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to be passionate when you see the fire that you guys light when you train and compete. And I mean, who wouldn't want to be a part of that show?
Well, it makes a difference for us too when, you know, we're getting treated by people who really care and who want us to bounce back as quick as possible and better than before as well. So thank you for that. And thank you for all the other practitioners who do that for many different athletes.
Yeah, I remember one saying you told me that one of the first times I saw you at about 10 years old, I didn't quite understand it at the time, but you told me you have to have that team in place because it's not if you get injured, it's when you get injured. And I will never, ever forget that after you told me that at 10 years old, because it's inevitable at high performance sport. There's always, it's impossible to not face roadblocks along the way.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting too, because in different sports, they have different attitudes about treatment, you know, and there's been the midget hockey model where, you know, suck it up, you know, you're fine, gut it out. And just like, if somebody's injured, they sometimes coaches and people will treat injuries as a weakness. And the reality of high level sport is everybody trains on the edge of injury. If you train 1 ounce less, you lose. And if you train 1 ounce more, you're injured. You're right on that fine line all the time. You guys know it. I mean, you live it every day. And so it's important to have those support systems in place for the treatment of injuries, like we said, that are inevitable. They're going to happen. If you don't get injured, you're not trying hard enough, truthfully, occasionally, and hopefully it's nothing bad. But also for prevention, to minimize the occurrence of those things. But then the next level I think is really cool is optimizing performance. And I know I've been really fortunate, I mean, to work with Derek Druin throughout his career, and his coach, Jeff Huntoon, and his original coach, Joel Skinner, are amazing coaches. They have coaches' eyes. They can see things in real time, real speed that I can't see. And when they show me on videotape, I get it. But in real life, I can't see it that quickly. It's amazing the things they see. And so something could happen in a practice where I say, coach, how's practice going? And they'll say, well, you know, he's not extending his arm over the bar today. It's just not getting over, or his back's not extending. Well, if I get told those mechanical things that are inhibiting factors, biomechanically, we can figure out with his body, is there something inhibiting that? And we can provide some treatment to improve performance. So that's always been one of my favorite things, is mixing the coaching expertise with the IST expertise and seeing if you can come up with a hybrid performance. So really, really interesting area.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. We're Mike and I are both very lucky. Our coach Allison and also Bruno as well for Mike work very closely with our IST team for that reason. Whether we're injured or we're not injured, we're trying to prevent things. Like, for example, my physio Pat in Oakville, he always will check in with me, and then he checks in with Allison. Hey, is Trent having any issues that you see on the ice? Because I might not feel it, but Allison's like, yeah, like this area is tight or looks tight when we're trying to do certain movements. So it definitely really, like when, like you said it, the team atmosphere, but the whole village, like it really is not just focused on the athlete and the coach. You're completely right. The IST team is a big part of the performance part of it and getting better.
It's so true. And there's so much communication required. People can't live in their own little bubble. They have to speak, like you say, talk to each other. I did a lot of stuff with Allison when she was a coach in Strathroy, and 100% she is a coach that definitely delves into that layer of coaching and treatment.
Now going back to like what you were just talking about with Derek, Druin, about that, do you have any other cool like sort of stories about that where you feel like you've made like a big difference, not just in the training aspect, or I guess more in the training aspect, like a coach saw something and it was like you just fixed this one thing that led to them to be able to optimize their technique or strength better?
Yeah, I mean, so from an injury perspective, everybody has a couple of hero cases they have, you know, no matter what profession or sport they're in. And had one NHL player that had missed like 25 games one season, and I think he missed 22 games the next season with an adductor strain. He pulls his groin all the time. And, you know, he has amazing trainers and doctors evaluating. He gets the benefit of imaging, and like he gets MRIs, ultrasounds. They have everything at their disposal. And one of his teammates asked me if I would take a look at him and see if I could help him. So the reality of that situation is he's had tons of great therapy and it just hasn't helped him yet. So the dumbest thing I could do is copy exactly what everybody else did that didn't work. So it kind of sets it up for me to find, you know, some crazy outlier problem and make a difference with it. But when I examined him, the only thing I could find wrong with him was that his glute on that same tight was like a stone. It was like so tight. It was unbelievable. And I mean, you couldn't miss it. And that off season in the summertime, I treated his glute. I didn't touch his groin once or his adductor muscles, treated his glute, and his groin pain went away and never came back. Now, I probably wouldn't have done that initially. I would have done the same thing they did. So the table was set for me to just, you know, go up and find that solution. But it's a great story. And I mean, that player thinks I'm way smarter than I really am. So, you know, that got me a new set of golf clubs and, you know, a couple great golf games at Oakland Hills Golf Course in Detroit. So, hey, it was good. It was very good.
Over your career, you've worked more with the individual athletes as opposed to any team, or you've worked with some team organizations, but some of the higher end athletes, you're privately working with them. What are the benefits to that?
So I think in the world of high level sport, like the advantage those athletes have today is that they get paid enough money that they can afford all of those nice extras. And in previous years, you know, like decades ago, even NHL hockey players didn't make enough money to hire private people. But today, almost every player has his own nutritionist and strength coach and chiro or physio or massage or all three. And they have the ability to utilize those people to help them achieve new levels. The reality in the training room and like even in a NHL arena, practice ends. They only have two or three therapists, but they have 25 players. And a player doesn't want to sit there for 2 hours waiting to get treatment because some of them have two kids and, you know, they've got a family at home. They want to get back home and do some things. And so those people can seek extra treatment that is very personalized for them after hours at their own convenience. So it's a little bit more convenient for them. They get extra time. And at the rink, it's pretty rushed. Everybody wants to get treated and get out of there. So there's a bit of a lineup and they don't get as much personal attention as you might think they do. And so it's nice for them to have their own people on the outside. The other secondary thing would be that there's a little bit of a division sometimes where some athletes don't always trust team staff because they get paid by the team. So they like to employ people on the outside that are their personal advocate. I work for you, not the team. Therefore, you know, anything we talk about is going to be completely based upon your advantage, not anybody else's. Now, from an ethical standpoint, I'd like to think that even if I'm employed by a team, I'm going to try and be pretty objective, but that's not always the reality. So I think they like to have that safety net built in there.
Now, so let's talk about the actual injury process. So what is it? How does it change from injury to injury? Let's talk about like a return to play sort of action. Right. Does it change a lot from injury to injury? Or you have like the same sort of process that you go through right from when they come to your table to when they're back at full capacity of whatever sport they're doing?
Right. I think like a lot of the procedures we go through are so procedural, like, you know, how's pain control? How's your range of motion? How's your strength? Then we do more complex movement patterns, sport-specific movement patterns, high speed versus, you know, casual movement. And then it gets really more complicated when you take individual players. And an example would be a hockey player with a separated shoulder. So what kind of player are they? Are they a banger? Are they going to go out and be body checking like crazy and fighting? Or are they a high skill player that's not going to be getting hit at all? And a coach would say, well, listen, we know you're still injured, but we'll bring you back early and just put you on the power play where nobody's going to hit you. Those two players go back at very different times with the exact same injury. So there are so many variables that go into that situation. And then also in that same thing is athlete willingness. Some athletes, their brain switches off when they step onto the ice. They don't think about that and they'll go out there and get themselves re-injured. Other people think more and they'll be more respectful of that injury and they'll take a step back. And so it's really interesting all the different variables you have to account for with the same injury.
That's a really interesting one, though. Actually, I never thought about the same injury and the different positions in that sense. Like what you said, does that this person actually going to get hit a lot, or is he not going to get hit a lot? So he could be back earlier, just not at the normal full capacity, but still back on the ice playing a lot earlier. That's like, maybe that's just because we don't play hockey as right. our sport. Well, but well, like,
yeah, I mean, to use a skating example, if your daughter Trent if my daughter is your pair's partner, and you got a separated shoulder, I'll guarantee you, you're sitting out longer than Mike is, because there's no way I'm letting you lift my daughter up in the air with a sore shoulder. But I might not care as much about Mike's partner because she's not my kid.
Yeah. Also fair. Very fair.
Yeah. But hey, sorry about that, Kirsten.
But also same, you could do it in the same position. We're both like, let's say we have a single skater has the same groin injury that I have. I'm not jumping quite as much, so I'm not quite putting the same amount or doing quads the same amount of tension on my groin. So, or my ankle, realistically, I have to do two jumps. If it's okay enough to get through that and not seven in a program, I might be back sooner than them.
And we see some of those really technical decisions being made. And in the Olympics, just within the decathlon, you know, Pierce Lepage was obviously injured. You could tell by watching him. And if you look at the stats in high jump, he went in at 199, took one jump, and then shut it down. It's obvious that his knee was bothering him. So he decided, I'm going to make one height so that I get a score, but I'm not going to take a million attempts and aggravate my knee so that I can't finish later on. And the same thing happened with, if we watch Ellie Black go back and do her beam performance, she changed a few elements because she wants to go out and compete. She took a degree or two of difficulty out so she can actually do it because of her functional limitations on that ankle. It cost her on the score sheet, but she got to compete. And she might not be happy with fourth because she wanted a medal, but if she didn't take those elements out, she probably would have fallen. You know, I mean, we'll never know for sure, but statistically, or, you know, if you had to guess, it's probably more likely that she would have.
Do you have any good story from the 2016 games? I remember right after Derek won the gold, you got some good TV time right next to his parents there.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like a wild time.
Yeah. So, I mean, all my friends still tease me about me doing the worst high five in the history of CBC television.
I mean, we'll try to clip that and throw it on the Instagram so everybody can see that.
I mean, I stood up to high five his dad, and his dad turned around to hug his mom. I was left hanging there. So, you know, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do here, but hey, that's a good problem to have, right?
Big time.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting because you guys know at competitions, like when you eat dinner and when you get back to the village, like it's all scrambled by your performance times and travel. It's like nothing's normal. And so Derek jumped in the preliminaries, and we were walking out of the stadium, and he said, hey, I just tweaked my knee. And I said, you just tweaked your knees? Like, yeah, something's really hurting my knee on the outside. So I said, well, let's go back and look at it tonight. And he said, tonight? I said, yeah, we're not waiting till tomorrow. So by the time we get back to the Olympic Village, it's probably midnight. No one's eaten dinner yet. So we go into the cafeteria, eat dinner, get back to our rooms. So we went into my room, and it's like a townhouse. Like, it's got a living room, and then it has a bunch of bedrooms off of it. And so I'm in a townhouse room with a bunch of coaches and other IST members, and they're all sleeping. Because I think it's about 1:15 in the morning by then. And so, you know, he just irritated his IT band on the outside of his knee. So I said, well, let's laser it. So the laser I have, it makes a really loud beeping noise. And the only furniture that was in there was one couch and a beanbag chair. So I'll never forget lasering Derek's knee kind of in the half dark at 1:15 in the morning. And I picked up the beanbag chair and threw it over top of the laser to try and muffle the beeping noise it makes, so I didn't wake everybody up in the house. You know, and it's like, that's a moment where you think, man, I wish there were somebody who was documenting this stuff, because nobody would believe this crap, right? And fortunately, it was just a little irritation. It responded really well to treatment, and obviously it didn't impede his performance because he went out 2 days later and absolutely destroyed that competition. So
that's awesome. Yeah, that's when you need CBC. Like, they almost need like security cameras or CBC to be in there at that time for when he, after he won the high jump. I remember watching that. I didn't know that you worked with him until now, actually, but I remember watching that like live on my TV, obviously not at the games, but that was a huge moment. So congratulations for that, sir. Obviously did a lot to help with that.
I mean, just pretty obviously, obviously amazing experience to be involved with and to have a front row seat too. And you know what, I think being involved in sport medicine, like I think all the IST members are huge sports fans. So having a front row seat to watch you guys compete, that like that's priceless. So
that's awesome. And then, so how did the, were you there for the entire games then? Were you just treating Derek or were you treating other athletes as well?
I was the chiropractor for Athletics Canada. So for the track team. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So that must have been an amazing experience to be there for an entire games as well then, right?
Yeah, it is amazing. And right now the massage therapist from our office, Eric Korda, he's one of the massage therapists with Athletics Canada. So it's been neat. And it's a bubble, like you know, nobody can come in or go out of the village. So it's pretty neat to see some pictures coming from behind the scenes and, you know, it's a different flavor for sure.
That's sweet. I didn't know Cardo was there. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's in there. These past couple of days would be huge, busy days for him with the relays and the, you know, decathlon, heptathlon, everything that was going on. It's like, he would be swamped right now.
Now, so when you were there, did you find that a lot of the treatments you were giving were just to like for little aches and pains like that for the most part, like to help with like just like up like the athlete feel great going into their event?
Right. Yeah. Track athletes utilize a lot of treatment and so they do a lot before they even warm up. Just they like to get loosened up, tuned up. And so the hope is that we get utilized the most for that. A few injuries arise during the course of the games and our IST team meets. So we'll have our team physician, the physio, the chiro, the massage, and if needed, the sports psychologist all meet. And we'll have a team meeting every single morning about every athlete that has injury needs so that we can have a comprehensive approach to that athlete during that day. So most of it's performance treatment and prevention treatment, but occasionally things do arise that require injury management. And the good news is, as you guys know, everybody has a routine. Everybody's been treated by somebody. And so when you go to a games or a competition, you know how you like to be treated. And it's definitely not a time to try and reinvent the wheel. If somebody says, I do really well with this, this, and this, but I hate this, I'm going to do what they want because I'm there to help facilitate their performance. And that they know that works, so let's do that. If they're injured and something new arises, we'll take a different approach to that because at that moment, that's something new to them.
That's awesome. That's a really, you know, I think... For people who like for other athletes, it's really nice to hear that other practitioners are like that. Like, okay, yeah, you know what? This works really well. Pat does this to me and I respond really well to it. And you're not just trying to, oh, no, he's wrong. This is going to work better for you. Like, you're just doing whatever they need at the time. Because we travel the same thing. We travel all of our events that we go to as Team Canada athletes. We go with our own Skate Canada physios and doctors, and for the most part they also like they do that as well, but it's nice to know that they're just coming to do their which you would like or what you know feels best, unless there's like you said an injury that actually is sustained and you have to deal with it from there. But that's really nice to hear other people say that as well.
Right. And by the time you guys get to the level that you're at, you've had tons of treatment. Like, you guys have tried most things. You know what works for you and what doesn't. And I mean, it's not about the practitioners. It's not about the IST team. It's about you and your performance. So at that point in time, and it's go time, it's what works for you. So that's your feedback's really important to the IST team.
So we've talked about your track athletes. We've talked a little bit about hockey athletes. Have you treated any other high level sports before? Like what other,
So like NFL football, I mean, I treat lots of NFL football players. Yeah.
That's awesome. Can you tell us any stories or are you or like clientele that you've worked with from there?
Stories. I mean, going back to just when we were talking about practitioners and athletes don't care what you do. I had an NFL football player. He's a starting center in the NFL for 15 seasons. And when I first met him, I think I had treated him three times. And like I had adjusted every part of his body, did full body active release on him. And I think on our fourth visit, he said, hey, John, what do you think about chiropractors? And I said, chiropractors, man, I think they're sweet. Why do you ask? And he said, well, you know, our team has one, but like, I don't really like them. And I said, I go, well, but like, you know, I'm a chiropractor, right? And he said, you are? And I said, well, like I've adjusted your neck and everything. Like, what did you think I am? And he said, oh, I never really thought about it. You're just John. So like, and some people might be offended by that, but I, truthfully, that's the beauty of sport. Like I said, they don't care who you are or what you do as long as you make a difference. And I mean, there's the living proof. And I mean, this guy was such a beauty. It just leads me into one more story about him. When I would treat him, NFL players, Tuesday is their day off. So they get a lot of treatment done on Tuesdays. So every Tuesday, this guy would tell me, John, you're not going to believe what happened my game Sunday. So he'd always have a story. So that season I was treating the starting center, the starting right guard and the starting right tackle on the team. And so the center says to me, so I set up the huddle after a play and the guard runs back in the huddle. And he says, hey, I just tweaked my neck. I got to call John. He's like, John, this guy's in our huddle talking about calling you. Are you kidding me? So, I mean, I loved it because I said, man, you just made my year. I mean, it's classic. These guys are so funny.
That's amazing. How often are you going? That I assume most of this is in Detroit. Are you? How often are you headed down there?
So obviously the pandemic put a shutdown on the whole world, but those guys used to get treated once a week through the whole season. And they make road trips to see me. I make road trips to see them. And it's all pretty fun. You know, they work hard and their bodies get smashed up. And truthfully, though, they're really, really well educated about taking care of themselves. High level athletes do a much better job these days. And I would say the biggest change has been in better nutrition. And definitely more utilization of regular treatment of all types, whether it's massage, acupuncture, chiro, physio. One of the things that I think is really interesting, we're talking about the definition of chiropractor. I've always remarked that if you went to the Olympics and you watched, and I'll talk specifically about the track team. So we have physios and chiros and massage therapists. If you watched us treating the athletes, you'd be really hard pressed to say which one of us is a physio versus a chiro. Because the reality is everybody at that level on the IST teams has gravitated towards treatments that work well for athletes. And we almost all end up doing things very similar, no matter what profession we come from. So it's really interesting how we all kind of morph into a very similar animal, despite our different backgrounds.
That's awesome. So it's much more of a thing of just finding the person that works well for your team, not so much of that you need to have just like you need a chiro and a physio and this and that, or you should only have one of them. It's finding somebody or the people who really work for part of your team to make you feel the best you can possibly feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're quite the avid golfer, eh, Dr. Vargo?
I would say avid's a pretty key word in that sentence there. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, me and Trent we're 2 weeks away from our big match?
Actually, after this is it, our match should have happened by the time this one releases, I believe, Mike. Yeah.
It's going to already be over when
it's already going to be over, but
we are both very subpar golfers and we've been talking trash here over the first 9 episodes and we've played a couple rounds together. Trent has won most, if not all of them, but we set a date at the beginning of the summer or spring, August 15th. We are headed out for a big match. So do you have any tips for us or our listeners? We are very new to the game, so we'll take anything you got.
So Mike, since obviously you're my guy and known you for 20 years, I'm, you know, I mean, I'm going to have to just side with you a little bit. So maybe in Trent's backswing, you could just ask him, hey, do you always do that thing at the top? And he'll say, like, what thing at the top? And it's going to mess his head up because he's going to be thinking about it for the rest of the round. So maybe we can like get him hypnotized later so he forgets he heard this. And then you Beautiful. Can just do that and you'll just mess with him. But you know what? Golf is such a counterintuitive game. As I'm sure you've noticed, if you swing for the cheap seats and you swing as hard as you can, the ball does not go further. And sometimes if you swing really easy, it just rockets off your club face. It's the hardest part of golf is to dial it down and swing easy. And I think biggest advice, one of the coolest things I ever saw was don't hit the ball. Just let the ball get in the way of your swing. And basically, you know how sweet your practice swing is? Like it's sweet, right?
Yes. And then you just get the bottom of the, like, just the grass, that little bit, that perfect right. sound.
It's unbelievable. And then you take that 2-inch step forward to hit the ball and your swing there looks nothing like your practice swing was. And that's because we try to hit the ball. And if you just could like forget the ball's there and just do your practice swing and pretend the ball's not there, it will rocket off your club face. That's my advice.
That's a good one. I'm going to have to remember that. As I step up to every ball, I'm always telling myself 40% swing, 40% swing.
I like that.
Halfway through my backswing doesn't end up being 40% swing. And I have to tell myself again, and it's hard to break the habits, but I know what I have to do.
Well, the good news with those swings is that it keeps the greenskeepers employed because they're always going to be doing turf repair, right?
Exactly. So
it's a job creation project for greenskeepers. Yeah. You got to love it.
Yeah, I know. My main issue, and Mike has seen it, is my boomerang slice of a drive. Like, just, I don't even know how to fix it. We're like, Mike and I talk about this all the time. We're both very body aware. We've both been told what to do and how to fix things in our bodies for, 15, 20 years. So I just need somebody to tell me what I'm doing wrong to figure it out. Because Mike's like, I don't know. I don't know anything about golf. No.
And you know, it's funny. When I started playing golf, I had the boomerang slice too. And everything that you try to do to fix it just makes it worse.
Yes, 100%. You're correct.
And the fix is the exact opposite of what you would think would fix it. That's the hard thing with it. And golf is so counterintuitive.
That's awesome. Well, there's similarly in disc golf, Mike. I've learned not to just throw it as hard as you can every single time, or else the disc is not going to do what it's supposed to do.
Yes, we're a little bit better at disc golf than we are at real golf. We're quite the avid disc golfers. I got Trent involved about 2 weeks ago, and he's played about 11 times in the past 14 days, and he's gotten extremely good over 2 week time.
Nice. Nice.
Joined the Paris Disc Golf Club yesterday, so played my first league day on Sunday. So it's going to be versus Bronte with Michael over there.
I like it. I'm not sure if Canaterra Park in Sarnia still has their disc course. Do they have it, Mike? You know,
they do not. Unfortunately, there's nothing in Sarnia. Only Forest Golf Club has some pay to play course, but nothing in Sarnia anymore.
Yeah, Canaterra tried that for a while, many moons ago.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah. We need to get on that. Sarnia, let's get in a disc golf course.
There you go.
Michael, run it. Michael, run it. Michael, be the president of the club.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I like it.
So, Dr. Vargo, over the years, you've given me a couple book recommendations. So I'm curious to hear what kind of book recommendations do you have for our listeners, and especially a teen athlete or an up-and-coming inspiring athlete.
So if I had to bet, I probably told you to read Mind Gym by Gary Mack.
Yes, you did.
And it's actually funny because Derek Druin was on a podcast about 2 months ago, and him and I had just been talking about that, and they asked him about book recommendations, and he was saying that that's what I had recommended. And I think I probably have given about 50 copies away to young athletes. It's interesting because Derek, sports psychologist, J.F. Menard out of Montreal, he just wrote a book called Train Your Brain Like an Olympian. And I've read that book. It's also a really good read. I always liked Mind Gym because it was there. Oh, there you go.
We both got it.
All right. Good job. Mind Gym was just that introduction to process thinking versus outcome thinking, and just so important in calming our minds during stressful times of competition. I've been really fortunate with JF Menard I get to talk to him all the time and been in training camps with him and at competitions, and him and I have shared a lot of conversations about Derek and with Derek. We have a pretty open team, and it's been amazing to talk to him, to be able to help deliver a message that's consistent and has the right tone to it, you know. So it's invaluable. Every high level athlete needs a sports psychologist, and it's huge.
The quality of content that JF puts out on his Instagram is just second to none. Gold medal Olympic athletes are paying top dollar for the content that he's putting on his Instagram. It's absolutely gold. Rewatch all of his Instagram videos on a weekly basis. It's second to none.
Yeah. No, I've had the pleasure of, like I say, being at training camps, having dinner with him. I can't get enough of that stuff, and it matters so much. So much.
Anything else, Trent, or should we jump into some rapid fire questions?
Definitely dive into some rapid fire questions.
Beauty. Let's finish it up with some light questions here for you, Vargo. What is your favorite, or sorry, who is your favorite sports team?
Favorite sports team would have to be Detroit Red Wings. Hometown, close by, in high school, university. One of my very, very best friends, Sean Burr, was drafted and played for the Red Wings for, you know, 12 seasons. So I got to be around them as a university-aged guy. And then I've gotten to meet and treat lots of players. Lots of those players are now older guys, and they are actually managing the team and running the draft and doing player development. So it's really interesting to get to follow a team where you know the people. I mean, it makes it so much more exciting than it already is, which is hard to believe.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back to a Wings game. I used to go to a couple every year, but now it's been maybe 7-8 years since I've been there. Actually, I haven't even been to Little Caesars Arena, so I got to check out the new place. That's how long it's been since I've been to a Wings game.
Yeah, we need to jump into a game together.
Definitely. I'm in.
I'll go if they're playing the Leafs.
All right, that's good. Yeah. Can't beat that rivalry.
Nope. Last year, so actually, quick little story. When we were Montreal was supposed to be we were supposed to have Worlds in Montreal in 2020. So Mike and I were at the Bell Center. We had a practice day, and then we had decided we were able to be roommates for the week, and we were going to show up every single day after we were done competing to watch with our. He was going to wear his Red Wings jersey, and I was going to wear my Leafs jerseys, and we just looked like oddballs at a figure skating Worlds. But we were in the Bell Center, so we wanted to make sure that we were showing our true pride.
That's great.
So what is the best concert you have attended?
You know, I'm going to go with Aerosmith when they played at Bayfest in Sarnia.
That's my favorite concert I've ever been to, too. It was amazing.
And I mean, the most ridiculous thing is, you know, that's 20 yards from my office. So, I mean, it's shocking to think that there were 25,000 people with Aerosmith. And I was the chiropractor on call for Bayfest. So if the bands had anything wrong with them, I'd get a phone call. And I didn't get any phone calls. I just got to go and sit and watch the concert. So it was incredible.
Yeah, that was awesome. Big walk out in the middle of the crowd. Steven Tyler walking all the way to the back. It was sick. That was a good time.
Yeah, unreal.
So pizza or pasta? Which one are you grabbing?
I'm probably going pasta.
Can't go wrong with either.
Yeah. I'm probably going to go with, you know, like a Misto di Mare, a seafood pasta.
Nice.
Wake boat or catamaran?
Wake boat.
Yeah. A little more fun.
Yeah. A little bit more juice.
Yeah. What is your favorite hobby?
Golf.
Golf. That's what I was expecting. I got in brackets here. If golf, what is the nicest course you have ever played?
Nicest course I've ever played would be Oakland Hills, just outside of Detroit. Pretty fortunate I got to play it with a couple guys I did some work with. Sean Horkoff played for the Edmonton Oilers, and he's now the director of player development for the Red Wings. Dan Cleary and Chris Draper. And those guys all work for the Red Wings now. And it's interesting because they told me the whole year, they're all members at Oakland Hills. They said, we're going to bring you out to play. And the first time we play there, we're not giving you any advice. You're on your own. And this is a PGA course. They've had US Opens there. And this place is hard. And true to form, no matter what I asked for, they just looked at me and smiled. They would not tell me a thing. So it's pretty tough out there, let me tell you.
Did you beat them or come close?
I did not beat them. And it's funny. Hey, on the first tee, a whole bunch of people came out to watch because those three guys are teeing off. And my knees were knocking. I was so nervous with all those people watching. And I probably piped my best drive of the summer right up the middle. I was so relieved. And I got out there thinking, oh man, I'm all that. Well, let me tell you, my next shot wasn't so good. So, hey, that's golf, right?
That's golf. Yeah.
But at least that didn't happen in front of the clubhouse.
That's all that matters is the first drive and the last drive coming back to the clubhouse. Wherever it can be seen by the clubhouse has to be a good shot.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this with us. You're a very, very busy person, very knowledgeable, and it was a great podcast. It was nice to finally meet you virtually. Like I said it before, I've heard so much about you from Mike from training with him. So thank you for jumping on with us.
Yes, hey, thanks. Thank you very much first. We know your time is valuable, and you'll have to put the bug in Eric's ear when he gets home from Tokyo, that we would love to hear about his experience over there in Japan.
100%. And thank you guys. It's an honor to be, you know, on here with a couple of Canada's best athletes, and wish you guys all the best this year. It's a big year coming up for you guys, and I hope you guys go out and kill it.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So, Ice Labbers, I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. Get to work in your labs and
peace and love, and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram @IceLabPodcast for more information and to stay up to date.